You're listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 236. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm recording for you in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show out of, well, he's normally out of Philadelphia, but I think he's in California.
Killer Cali, baby. California dreaming.
You just oscillate from coast to coast, but never touch the center.
Coast to coast, the podcast host with the most. That's how it goes. Here in a flash, gone like a ghost. Johnny G, ruin this chicken roast.
Ooh, why are you in California? Can I ask?
For work. I'm out of here for work right now.
For how long?
For a month. I was doing depositions last week. Tomorrow I'm doing a mediation, doing some other stuff with regards to property deals, baby.
Some Jack McCoy shit.
Speaking of the mushy center of the continent, the pasty, bland,
hey.
Boring, sticky.
Hey.
What? Oh, sticky. Sorry. Stick. I don't know. I'm running out of. I don't even know. So, I don't know. Where are you from again? You just moved. You're in Lafayette now?
Indiana. Yeah, like 2.5 hours southeast of Chicago.
There you go. Greg Simpson.
Yeah. Hi. Yeah. And Best Midwestern, dude. Don't forget Best Midwestern.
So, some stuff happened today that I guess I don't know if we even hinted at it on the podcast up to this point, but anyways, but some big news from the punk news world. We have a project. Specifically, John has a project that he has spearheaded in many ways. And should I just throw this over to you?
Why not? So we announced something today at Punk News that we've been working on for about 4 or 5 months maybe, and it almost started out as a joke. Well, actually, I had this idea in my brain, and I said on Punk News, I'm like, well, what if we did this? I said this in the Punk News Hovercraft office during our weekly meetings at the round table. And Adam White was like, we should just do it. And I think even Adam White was joking, but then I said, screw it, I'm going to do it. So today we announced something that I think is really, really, really cool. Today we announced that Punk News is going to be putting out a 42-band mixtape compilation. And I think it's super cool. It's basically an overview of legendary and modern bands that we think are cool. All the tracks are new with a few exceptions. So it's all new songs, more or less. But some of the bands are hero, like punk rock titans on it. And some of the bands are the up-and-comers. And what I think is really fun is I'm quite aware that there's a whole bunch. I mean, there are so many compilations out there, and I get the feeling that nobody listens to most of the compilations out there. Like, every other week, it's like, here's a benefit for people with hearing loss. Here's a benefit for scared dogs, you know? And they're like, here's 400 bands for $4.99. I don't think anybody ever really listens to that. So we wanted to make this compilation special. So what we did is Punk News actually has a pretty good relationship with two DJs. The DJs are called DJ Johnny G and Dynamite Adam White. And they're pretty hot DJs. So we had them mix together 42 tracks. So the whole thing sounds like a hip-hop mixtape. I mean, well, the music is punk rock, but it's mixed like a hip-hop mixtape with lots of shout-outs, with some skits. And plus, we got some really cool exclusives. We got a super rare... pardon me. We have a super rare Jesse Michaels and Classics of Love track, which has never had a physical release. We've got an exclusive Mischief Brew track where they cover a Flux of Pink Indians, which is insane. We've got the brand new project by Joel Tannenbaum. Plus, we've got legends like the Dwarves. We've got Jello Biafra on it. On top of that, we've got a bunch of really cool new bands. We've got Downtown Boys. We've got... We've got Bad Canoes. We got a lot of punk news favorites like Swingin' Utters. We've got Pushing It to the Limit. Basically, it's 42. We got Dead Milkmen. Plus,
John, you're so excited, you're gonna die.
Well, no, and plus, on top of that, man, we got like some absolute. We've got KRS-One, the famous hip hopper. We've got Lee Scratch Perry, who I would argue is maybe the most important guy in music ever. He worked with The Clash. He produced Bob Marley and Peter Tosh, but he's also made some. You know, he produced Junior Mervin. He produced The Congos. He's, I would say, without question, the greatest producer of all time. We've got him on it, and on top of that, we got Andrew WK, the Party Master. So I'm super excited for this. I'm a mega fan of some of the bands on this. I'm a huge fan of a lot of the bands on this, and the other bands that I wouldn't necessarily be a fan of. We worked really hard to make the mixtape feel like a mixtape, so the different songs play off each other. Like, there's so many hardcore comps where, like, every song is exactly the same, or pop punk comps where every song is exactly the same. I really think these songs work well together, and so I really like every single song on this mixtape because they work off each other and play off each other's strengths, and in doing so kind of makes themselves better. In a way, it's a hip-hop mixtape with punk rock tunes, which is absurd. But when I was making it, what was kind of going through my brain was Let Them Eat Jelly Beans mixed with Give Them the Boot. You know, so like an overview, but also a wide range of different styles. So it's called My Org, playing off My War, of course. And it's got intros and shout-outs, and I just think the whole thing is hilarious and great. And it'll be for sale by the time you hear this, and I really recommend that you get this tape. It's going to be very reasonably priced, probably $6. And, I mean, it's 120 minutes, and I just think it's banging. I mean, it is a banging, banging tape.
The track list looks pretty amazing. You did a good job, man. It looks fucking killer.
Thanks, man. In a way, this is a culmination of 10 years, because the reason why I was able to get so many legends like Dead Milkmen, like Jell-O, like Andrew WK, like Mischief Brew, like World Inferno French Society, is because I've interviewed, you know, for the past 10 years, I've been doing a lot of punk rock interviews. So I was able to license these tracks, if you will, and get it all together on one tape, you know.
Yeah, I'm seeing you clarify it. You clarified it for some guy just a little bit ago on the comments section, because I think people would assume it's punk rock. You just steal people's music, but you are a man who knows the law, and you know you want to make the artists happy that we like them and want them to like us. So, yeah, you done good, man.
Thanks, Greg. I appreciate that. And actually, what was really exciting for me is a lot of the legends were, like, super excited. It wasn't like, I thought, like, well, I wrote a pretty persuasive letter, I felt. But, like, I thought, like, I would have to say to, like, Jell-O or to the Dwarfs or to, like, Morning Glory or to Integrity. We got Integrity on this, which is insane, Integrity. I thought we'd have to be like, please, 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 can we put you on our tape? But they were so excited to be a part of it. Like, pretty much every band on here was like really, really excited to be on it, and they were really, really down with it, which made me so happy, you know. And so, yeah. So like I said, I think the tape is great. It's a wide, wide variety of music, and I think it just kicks from start to stop. I think it's just a great tape, and it's got some cool surprises on it too.
Yeah, when we recorded all of the all the bumpers and all the shout outs and the hip hop stuff that was on here, I gotta say, I got the weirdest looks from my wife. I mean, so, like,
yeah,
I'll get weird looks when I'm recording this podcast and she's sitting on like the couch looking at me. But this is by far the goofiest thing we have ever recorded. It's sort of gloriously goofy.
Yeah, I'm on it for like 10 seconds, but I had a blast. It was like the most fun 10 seconds I've ever pressed record on GarageBand and just said whatever. Well, I'm like, this isn't me. This is me as a fucking MC or something.
Well, when I was running out the script, I mean, at first, like, I never was going to make, like, if you listen to a mixtape, like mixtape guys like DJ Premier or Trax Maxer, or DJ Green Lantern, they're all very cool. They're like, yo, this is DJ Green Lantern, you know, coming at you hard. But then, like, when I do it, I just sound like a tool bag, you know what I mean? So, like we didn't try to be cool, you know? We just said, we're nerdy. We're just going to make it super nerdy. I don't even care, you know?
Hamming it up. Yeah, hamming it up.
And, but the fun thing, what Ad was talking about is when you're just doing shout-outs with no music behind it, like, his wife was, like, staring at him, like, shout-outs without music just sat, look and sound like so awkward, you know?
Yeah. Hey, Adam, did he get your wife to do some of the female parts on the album? Because I was trying to convince Cara to do it, and it just didn't end up happening.
My wife stayed, I think, very purposefully not involved in this whole endeavor.
Our very professional wives are like, no, you do your little, you do your kid shit over there. We're like, but we're having fun, honey.
Listen, you tell your wife, when this mixtape changes the opinion of popular music and, you know, like basically eliminates Justin Bieber and One Direction because it's so awesome. Like when the 14-year-olds are like, why am I listening to Justin Bieber and One Direction when I could be listening to punk? You can say to your wife, you could have been a part of the change, baby. You could have been a part of this cultural zeitgeist and you missed out.
Top 40 Radio is just going to play it in full on the air.
Yeah, they're just going to put our mixtape while we just let it ride, you know?
Yep.
Can we also talk about just like how great it is that this exists? Just I knew it was going to happen, but you had like a bunch of our commenters that were in there being like, why would you make it a tape? Why don't you put out a wax cylinder? It would be much better if this was a digital download so we could. And it's just kind of like, because it is by design just dumb and funny and
absurd.
It's gotta be a tape.
It's a thing you can hold. It's like punk news exists just like in the air. Like it's on your computer, but it's just out there. But then like when I can't remember if it was Justin August sent me my first punk news t-shirt in the mail randomly in like 2005, I was stoked. And then John just made these ones with the mixtape artwork, made these t-shirts for us. You know, as staffers made my day. I was just like, yeah, you know, just having something you can hold on to that's got the punk news name on it. You know, it's great.
Yeah, because it was made to be like a hip hop mixtape, because it was put together that way. It's got all this stuff on it. It had to be a tape.
Yeah.
Like it couldn't not be, even though, and I've voiced it on this show before, the idea of bands putting out things on tapes fundamentally breaks a part of my brain. This had to be a tape. It couldn't not be a tape.
I think we tried to make it as ridiculous as possible, and I think we pretty much succeeded, honestly. I mean, it's a tape. It's 120 minutes. It's got Andrew WK, Mike Park, ACXDC, The Hard Girls, KRS-One, Lee Scratch Pad. It's ridiculous. It's just so ridiculous. And honestly, it pretty much came out like I'd hoped it would come out. So,
anyway, so that's what we did.
So you
this
can,
week.
You'll be able to buy. You can get that on go to punknews.org and you'll find a purchase link. Probably going to be $6, which I think is entirely reasonable. So.
Yeah, can I ask how limited of a pressing is this? How many did your front?
It's very limited. So if you want to get one, you should buy it ASAP. Very limited,
right.
And we're probably not. We're almost definitely not going to do a second pressing. So you should probably buy it if you want it.
High five!
High five!
Five
so
five.
So on
right.
eBay.
All right. Well, can we get like Razor Cake to review it?
You know, I was thinking about sending it out for review. I know Razor Cake will hate on it, and I know Maximum Rock and Roll will hate on it. And I'm thinking, what does that get me? Does that get me free press, or does that just get me people like making fun of me, like because they're bullies for no reason? You know,
send it to Source.
I mean, honestly, like Source might actually think it's cool because they're more open-minded.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, the hip-hop, I mean, yeah, they're down with hip-hop. You should do it. They'd be like,
oh, no,
it's hip-hop tape, but fucking punk music. I'm going to find it hysterical.
Actually, you know what? Maybe that's an idea. The only problem, well, that's an idea, and I might do that.
So, speaking of stuff that I guess you have to have an open mind to accept, so... According to various social media whatnots and MTV, Laura Jane Grace is recording with Miley Cyrus. The collaboration looks like it's in support of Cyrus's Happy Hippie Foundation, which supports homeless youth organizations. On whatever this project is, Cyrus is also working with a bunch of other artists, including Ariana Grande. Is it Grande? I don't know.
Ariana Grande.
Grande? All right.
Grande.
I know Grande. Things about what's happening. I don't know who that is at all. So we don't know if that person who I don't understand is going to be on the same track as Laura Jane or not, or even what this is. Like, is it a record? Is it some online thing? I don't know. What do we think about this? About you know, is this something that Laura Jane can go do out of like complete sincerity because of the cause? Is it kind of taking the piss because it's Miley Cyrus? Are we in this realm where Miley Cyrus is like such a mainstream personality that she's actually now getting respect? I don't understand anything really.
She was on the
Someone
SNL
fill
special.
Me in.
She was on the SNL special and ruined it. I commented on this story, and I said I would rather have been Taylor Swift. I mean, at least Taylor Swift writes her own songs. The girl can write a hook. That's just me from a songwriting perspective. But I said, you know, they'd probably make more money if it was Taylor Swift. But what are you going to do? You know, I said it'll probably shine more light on transgender issues too. So there's that. That could be another reason, you know, just getting that perspective out there. And yeah, it's for charity. So I don't think she's doing it, you know, ironically or anything like that. So, you know, it's for charity and it's for a good cause and to further her cause of educating people. You know, it could possibly educate people on transgender issues.
I don't know if it's actually linked to transgender. You mean just because it's with Lauren and Grace?
Yeah, that could be why, it's a way for her to promote just herself, and that kind of brings that with it.
What's funny is whether or not it's cool to work with Miley Cyrus depends on the person who's working with them. Like, if it was the Melvins, I would think it's hilarious because the Melvins once recorded with David Cassidy or whatever. Like, the Melvins once did an entire tour with some like cheesy 70s star in like the 90s, and they did like a bunch of Nirvana songs to like just to be like punk or just to be like jerks, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then again, if this was like, if this was like Penny Rimbaud, maybe. But you can't hold up to Penny Rimbaud. If this was like, I'm trying to think, like what serious punk? Like, if this was Tim Armstrong, it'd be like Tim Armstrong. You're just trying to be a pop star, you know what I mean? But he's written for music for Pink, so I think the reason Lara Jane Grace gravitated towards this is, I think the perception of Taylor Swift, the perception of Taylor Swift is that she's a nice, you know, not, she's not that edgy. She's a nice person that writes nice music. Miley Cyrus is a much more edgier character. And I'm a little uncomfortable with the Miley Cyrus quagmire, if you will. It's because a big part of her fame comes from the fact that she used to be a child star and now she's, you know, all sexy or whatever.
Yeah.
And so there's an element of sexualization of a child there, you know. Like if Miley Cyrus is probably like 24 now, like if it was just if Miley Cyrus was no one and then when she's like 24 she's like, look at me, you know, do fellatio and wear nothing on stage, then I would be less troubled by the Miley Cyrus existence, you know what I mean? But setting that all aside, the question is, Lara Jane Grace working with Miley Cyrus, is that a sellout move, or is it an interesting art move, or is it just, you know, good fun? And I think it's just good fun, more or less. Against everyone else's approximations or forecasts, Miley Cyrus is actually starting to be getting taken seriously. Where, I mean, you know, when Miley Cyrus first started, like, being dirty, like, everyone thought she was going to be gone in, like, 6 months because it's like a gimmick. But she just kept doing it and kept doing more outrageous stuff without really releasing any songs that are that good except for maybe Wrecking Ball. But she just kept doing it, and now people are taking her seriously because she's still around. She's almost
really?
For sure. She's almost
I'll tell you, if it's any sort of barometer, you know, my students, they only know what is the most popular. And I've never heard my students, you know, preteens, but that's a big market. I've never heard them mention any Miley Cyrus song ever since, like, The Climb when she was still, like, Hannah Montana, and then Wrecking Ball, you know, a few years later. Nothing past that. I mean, and thank God, because Miley Cyrus is doing whatever. She's doing grown-up stuff now. I'm glad children are not being subjected to whatever it is she's doing. But to me, it's just smacks of effort. I mean, I don't know. People are starting to take Swift seriously, too, with her last album. So that could have been a cool thing. But while you were talking, John, I also looked up Happy Hippie. It looks like this is kind of like almost the launch of this charity.
Oh, yeah.
So I was looking. They don't have an official website yet. They have the domain happyhippies.org registered, but there's nothing there yet. It's on their Facebook page. And it says it was founded in September of 2014. And they've only even, you know, they got like 22,000 likes on Facebook, which is a lot. But for something for Miley Cyrus to be associated with, it's not that much.
Yeah.
So this seems like it's kind of like, you know, so, you know, Miley is getting people of all kinds, all genres, all whatever. I don't know if she's getting people that aren't musicians involved with stuff. But it's kind of, it seems like it's the launch. So it could be big. For Laura, too.
In the Gossip Mill, before this happened, Laura Jane Grace posted like this weird photoshopped image that she put up. It was her, Miley Cyrus, Kathleen Hanna, Joan Jett, and Ariana Grande. And then Laura Jane Grace took it down like 10 minutes later. So, like, that's like a weird thing to do. You know what I mean? So maybe those other artists are involved in this. Maybe they're not. It's just like a really weird thing to do, isn't it?
Hmm. It got us talking about it, right? So it built some buzz. I mean, like, you can hear from other people who are observers of the music industry that there is this growing, I don't know, amount of sort of almost begrudging respect for what Miley Cyrus seems to be doing, at least from an image standpoint or from a performance art standpoint. There was an episode of the very good podcast Roderick on the Line a few months ago in which John Roderick, who's he's the singer of The Long Winters, it was a band that was on Barsook. Anyways, John, he went to this Miley Cyrus concert that was in town in Seattle or whatever because he could. And he was not the right person to go to a Miley Cyrus concert considering that he's like an old man with a beard. But he tells this story of how he went there expecting to, you know, be taking the piss out of this dumb thing that the kids are in, and then was just completely blown away by the surreal mashup absurdity of this stage show, of just how it was absolutely every cultural reference imaginable barfed into one big obscene performance piece that he actually came away like with some begrudging respect, it almost sounded like, for what was going on there. So I don't think that opinion is necessarily unique amongst music people. So I got to imagine that if you're Laura Jane Grace and you get, you know, invited to come participate in this Miley Cyrus thing, you're probably less likely to write that off than, say, if you were some kid in the Punk News comment section.
Now I'm into this wormhole of stuff, and I'm on BuzzFeed because there's a thing about Happy Hippie, and there's a picture of Laura Jane Grace, well, the band, three-quarters of the band, and Miley on her Instagram. It says, to raise awareness for her charity, the singer has been recording a series of small concerts in her backyard for a project titled Happy Hippie Presents. And it says last night, which would have been February 12th, based on this article, February 12th, she was joined by punk band Against Me. And she got her. She's doing the tongue thing that she always does next to Laura. And then you got the other dudes. And Adam's back on the drums looking just stoked about it.
Now, not to drag this out, but does this further beg the question that despite everyone's facade, the vast majority of punk rockers just want to be pop stars?
I got to imagine that most people that are in a situation where they are a public performer is not going to make the same sort of black and white distinction between like pop stars and, you know, the underground that, you know, people that write in zines or comment on the internet do.
So that suggests that most punk rockers do want to be pop stars.
I would suggest that they want to do the next thing that they find interesting. And if they can justify working with the pop artist as, you know, the next interesting thing that they're going to do, then they're going to do that without sitting down and going like, all right, is this too much of a pop star for us to work with?
Well, and think about Against Me. They already went through the backlash thing, getting backlash, jumping to Fat Wreck. People were like, Fat Wreck is too big. And then it's like, okay, Sire. And then people really flipped out. So they've already dealt with that and had to kind of go back on, oh, well, she used to say on stage all this anti-capitalist stuff, whatever. You know, I mean, that's like ancient history now, it seems like. So
it does feel like ancient history, does it? Like, it really does.
Yeah, so she's already dealt with that whole thing. Like, you know, at this point, she's probably like, you know, fuck it. You know, it's for a good cause. You know, if people are going to say stuff, I've heard it all already.
So, there was other stuff that happened this week that I suppose we should get onto. There was basically the rest of the stories, aside from maybe the Amnesia Rock Festival, we'll end with that one. A whole bunch of other little things happened that are going to be of various levels of interest. The quick stories here, I guess. I guess we'll jump into a few of them. The one, this is a band that I have not thought about in a long time, but I was actually having a little bit of fun sitting down and listening to this song. But Sweden's Millencolin have announced a new album that's going to come out in 2015. It is called True Brew. It's going to be out on Epitaph in April. The band has stated that the album is a slight return to their musical roots, whatever that means. It probably doesn't mean they're going to start playing ska again. But they've gone and released the first single and the first video from this, which is called Sense and Sensibility. You can find the video on Punk News. I was super stoked that this was not a lyric video, because it feels like every time I look at anyone's video, it's always a lyric video. But this wasn't, and that was really nice. So Millencolin. I have this really short, intense relationship with this band, and then I forgot that they existed.
And those Epitaph comps back in the day, I mean, I was big into that stuff off those comps. I mean, I bought a couple records. I was never a super fan, but like you said, at the top of the story, it was cool to hear him again. And I like the song, and I always find his voice kind of cute with the whole, I don't know, some sort of language thing going on there.
He's
you
got
know,
a little
Swedish.
Bit of an English second language thing happening there, right? I mean, I remember I was in Killington, Vermont in the year 2000 on this like ski trip.
In Killington, Vermont in 2000 on a ski trip.
Really?
I really was.
Oh. Me too. No, I wasn't.
Oh. That's amazing. All right. So anyways, me and John were in Killington, Vermont. John, that was back in the day where they had that thing where you could get like hamburgers from McDonald's for like a dollar. You remember they did that for a while? Might have been less. I remember there was this thing where you could get like a whole bag of disgusting hamburgers for like for like 45 cents, because there was people that I was on this trip with that made a point of doing this almost to absurd levels. But anyways, so we're in Killington, Vermont. We were there. I was a snowboarder kid at that point in my life, and I was in the town, whatever the town is that's there next to Killington.
It's like Sweetbush or something like that.
Yeah, and I went to this little record store that was there, CD store, I guess it was. And while I was there, I bought Pennybridge Pioneers, which was the record that Millencolin had that came out that year. And I was super stoked on it because I was into all kinds of like skate punk at the time, and that really worked for me. And then that was it. That was my, you know, I didn't have a huge relationship with them prior to that. So whatever music they played up until then, I know there was a little bit of a change of approach on that record for them, but you know, hey, whatever happened before, who cares? I kind of liked Home From Home, which was the record that came out after that. The band got like, they became like a much bigger sounding rock band on that record, but I feel that after that, I don't know, they just sort of fell out of contention for me. Like I just stopped realizing that they were there. But hey, it was fun to hear a Millencolin song. I have not heard one in a long time.
And they never went on a hiatus or anything, did they? I mean, I'm
well. This is their first.
Discography.
This is their first record in like 7 years. Right. So, but you know, their prior one, Machine 15, came out in 2008. And the fact that 2008 is like 7 years ago is really, really weird. but anyways, yeah. So this is coming out. You should check it out. If you liked this band in the past, you'll probably like this record. So, John, you were in Killington, Vermont, eh? No shit.
I was. I particularly remember the town because my friend Tom Garcia and I were like we were walking down the street and we saw the cool kids in like some clothing shop trying on clothes. And at the time, we thought it was like so. This is like the cool kids. Like we thought it was so, I guess, fancy boy that they were like trying on. Like guys were like shopping for clothes and stuff. But little did I know when I got older that really, like how you look, like. Really does help you out with the ladies, you know what I mean? So Tom Garcia and I were ragging on those fools, but little did we know we were the fools.
I wouldn't have met my wife if I wasn't wearing some stupid thrift store shirt. So I mean, I went shopping for that. It was like 75 cents.
You know, I went to look this up in Wikipedia as we were talking about this, and the first thing that came up was Killington, Vermont, comma secession movement.
What?
In 2004, 2005, citizens of the ski resort community of Killington, Vermont, voted in favor of pursuing secession from Vermont and admission into the state of New Hampshire. So,
ooh, Vermont. Vermont sucks. What was so bad about Vermont?
I mean, more fun it was like secession from the United States, but
right.
Yeah. Anyways. So yeah, other stuff happened this week aside from us talking about what we did 15 years ago. John, pick up one of these stories. What do you want to talk about?
Yeah, let's talk about. Let's talk about this quick one. Part One is going to re-release their debut LP with their only LP. A lot of people might not know Part One, and that's because Part One was never that famous in the U.S. They're practically unknown. Even in the U.K., they're not that well known. Part One was a band that used to play with Crass, Rucks and Pink Indians, Rudimentary P&I, the whole Subhumans, the whole Crass Spiderleg crew. And Part One is unique because they're one of the earlier punk goth bands, one of the earlier death rock bands. And so you listen to their music, it's, you know, it's not Crass or Rucks and Pink Indians kind of charging, but it's not pure goth. Bauhaus kind of stuff either, Sisters of Mercy. It's almost exactly in the middle, so it's spooky music that rocks. They're re-releasing their LP. It's called Pictures of Pain. I have not heard the remaster yet, but I'm excited to hear it. Also exciting, the band is going to tour the U.S. Tour the U.S. in April. And so, I mean, if you're interested in the earliest part of anarcho-punk rock, you should go see this show. It's probably not going to be the greatest show you ever saw, but it should certainly be interesting and cool. And if you like anarcho-punk, it'll be pretty cool. Just to tag off of that, in the past 5 or so years, we've had so many cool reunions of the original anarcho-punk rockers. We had Steve Ignorant doing all Crass tunes. We had Zounds. We had Antisect. The Subhumans, but they never broke up. But the Subhumans came around. I'm missing somebody. Who am I missing? Amoebics, and that was mind-blowing when Amoebics came around. And so, you know, I recommend checking this out, and if you like it, you like it. So Part One was a cool band.
Well, I guess you mentioned them. We may as well just go right into that. So, yeah. So Rob Miller of Amoebics, Michelle?
No, yeah. It's Michael.
Is it Michael?
It's a guy. It's Michael, yeah. I think he spells it like a French,
Oh, okay.
Michel.
Yeah.
Michel. Away Langman of Voivode. John Misery of Misery and Andy Lefton of Warplague have formed a new band. The band is called Tau Cross, and they have already finished recording their debut LP. The release is expected this spring via Relapse Records. Rob Miller went and he said, "The music that evolved over this time is difficult to categorize, as there are clearly a lot of Amoebics in the songwriting, as well as some elements of gothic, Joy Division, Pink Floyd, Black Sabbath, industrial, and hard-rocking old-school punk rock. This is an entirely original work that is the organic fusion of four unique people. We decided to let the songs form themselves around the original demos and allow people to bring themselves into the mix, to allow the bark to growl around, to allow the bark to grow around the tree." See, I saw bark and I thought dog growl. Anyways, we are all very proud of what we have achieved in this short time and are looking forward to working together again as soon as time allows. So, project called Tau Cross. John, a lot of this is really up your alley. You heard anything?
I have not heard anything. I wrote the PR guy. I said, we want to interview Rob Miller. He said, okay, we'll set it up later. They did not send me any tracks, but he says, if you like Amoebix, you will love this. And I got to say, I am super excited for this. I find it amusing that in every press release or every release by Rob Miller, it always kind of goes back to like ancient pagan references. He's like talking about barks growing around the tree. That's very Wicker Man-ish, paganish, and he's like into that kind of stuff. His Adam and Greg. Do you know what Rob Miller's job is? Like what he does for money?
No.
No. What does he do for money?
He's the world's last forger of swords. And he makes them the same way the Vikings made them. Like if you go to any other swords guy, they use like modern like development techniques. He makes swords the same way that Viking makes swords.
So you fucking hammer it out on top of a stone.
And in some parts of England, he's more known for that than anybody else because he's like a master of it, you know.
Wow.
And it's called Skye Keep. Is where he makes it. He lives in the Isle of Skye, which is in the middle of nowhere, Scotland. Like I looked it up on Google Maps one time. It is in the middle of nowhere. Like you got to go over mountains, through streams, across oceans just to get there. The town is like a town of like 30 people, and it's on top of these ancient sites. It's like a half mile down. Well, not a half mile. It's like 1,000 feet into the ground. Like these not tombs, these unknown structures built by man 3,000 years ago that are like 1,000 feet down into the ground. Like not like tombs, but they're not tombs, and nobody knows what they're for. And I think it's some kind of pagan shit. And I think that's why he lives there, wow, because he's so into that stuff.
It's like some Stonehenge type stuff. Precisely, that's crazy.
Precisely, precisely.
I want to go to Scotland so bad. My parents went last summer to see places. You know, my ancestors. You know, my great 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 grandpa where he got married and stuff. We know that for some reason. I want to go so bad. Scotland just seems like a whole different world to me. I don't know why. And so much great music has come out of there.
Amoebix, but they're from England. But anyways,
holy shit, Rob Miller swords are not cheap.
Well, he's the master, you know what I mean?
Holy crap.
How much? Throw a number out there.
All right, so let's say you wanted what would you carry? Were you more of a Scottish Viking or medieval sword kind of guy?
Give me the biggest Scottish sword you have.
All right, so if we're on the Scottish sword here.
He makes a living off this? Wow.
If we wanted to just use the classic for you, Greg. So you're wandering around wherever you live, Lafayette, Bloomington, something like that.
Lafayette, got it.
Yeah, all right. And you are carrying a 55-inch claymore. The 55-inch claymore, the type that was used from the 14th century right up until the Battle of Culloden, remains the definitive Scottish sword. Just the basic model with an oak grip. You're looking at about 825 pounds.
Okay. Yeah.
Now that said, there is a few. Let's see here. I'm sure this is super interesting for all of our listeners. There's a few that are over 2,000 pounds on this list.
Wow. And that's money, in case people are wondering.
Yes, America. There's money in other countries.
So, it comes in pounds on you.
So let me tell you, I'm super excited for this. He said it's going to sound like Amoebix mixed with Joy Division, Pink Floyd, and Black Sabbath. I mean, that's about as great as
it is. Yeah. I can't even wrap my head around that. The combination of bands.
That's about as great as it gets, if you ask me. So I'm super excited. I am a little bummed out that Amoebix is no more. I think you can't ever replicate Rob Miller and his brother Christian / Stig Miller, like working together with drummer Roy Mayorga, because the last Amoebix record was one of the greatest records ever, if you ask me. That being said, I think this is going to be fantastic. I'm super excited for it. Adam, let's play a song.
I'm going to keep looking at swords while I'm playing this song. So, all right.
What's the name of the company again? Just give me the name one more time.
Castle Keep.
Castle Keep, yeah.
Castle Keep, okay.
Do you like how I know that without even looking it up?
you have very few interests, but those interests you delve into intensely. All right. We're going to talk about something that rules here. So Dirt Nap Records only puts out stuff that's great, and they continue to only put out stuff that's great with the new record from Kalamazoo, Michigan's legendary Wigs. So the band is putting out their second LP for Dirt Nap. It follows up a record they put out in 2012. If you like other stuff that Dirt Nap puts out, that makes that Dirt Nap sound, you know, stuff that really fits into that kind of Denton, Texas mold, the Marked Men, Radioactivity, all that kind of stuff, bands like the Exploding Hearts, whatever, all that, you will love this. This is so good. It's so fun. I was listening to the full thing on repeat before we started this show, and I'm just so excited about it. It's really, really good. So this song I'm going to play is called Weather Advisory. So it's from Legendary Wigs off their sophomore LP called Do You See, which is out now on Dirt Nap Records. Okay, we are back. We should talk about a couple more things merely before we wrap up. You want to jump right to the Giant Rock Fest here? Or is there anything else you wanted to touch on?
Just one thing with Legendary. I think we're streaming that at Punk News Legendary Wigs.
Are we?
I think we are.
I don't know what we do.
Let me look this up. You guys keep talking. I'll look that up because I think I set up the stream for that.
Guys, I'm buying a sword right now. I just need to see if they take PayPal.
Yeah, we do. if you want to hear the whole Legendary Wigs album, go to Punk News. We're streaming it.
Are we?
Yeah, and we gave it a 4. We gave it an 8 out of 10 review. Pretty good.
Oh, see, I don't even know what we do. It's so good. Anyways, okay. So speaking of things, there is a gigantic music festival that happens every year in Quebec, which we almost always ignore far more than it is worth us ignoring. I feel like we got shit about this before. So the Amnesia Rock Fest is a, what would you call it? It's a massive European style music festival.
Yes, that's what I would call it. Yes.
Yeah. And it European style in that there are bands from all sorts of genres, giant radio friendly bands, you know, smaller punk bands, classic bands, bands that we would be embarrassed to talk about otherwise on Punk News, like just the gamut. And it draws an insane number of people. And for the amount, for the amount of sheer human beings that this thing attracts into one place, it's always crazy how much we treat it as kind of like a, you know, a minor story.
Well, you know, whereas, why? I mean,
it's like we talk about Fest for like 7 weeks, but right, but so, something like this happens every year, and it might get mentioned by us. That fascinates me to no end.
Well, it's kind of their own fault because like they do all their stuff in French, and there's no like English website equivalent. So if they want to be inaccessible for me, why should I have to work to access them? That's very much in the Quebec attitude, if you ask me. Like, for example, like all the French and all the German and all the Italian festivals, they have English on their website. And I'm not saying if you're, you know, a non-American or non-Canadian festival, you should have an English website. But I'm saying if you don't provide an accessible way for me, then don't get mad if I don't report on it, you know? I mean, I'm not going to learn Swahili just so I can
report on it. John. There's an English button on their website.
There is?
Yeah.
Listen, if I have to find a button on a website, don't blame me for not finding
it. I mean, it's sort of blue text on a black background, so maybe the contrast wasn't enough for you. But
is the button in French?
Listen, if you can't provide good contrast between the colors...
So ignoring whatever John was talking about, let's talk about the line over this thing. The event is going to be held in a month, 18th to the 21st. So the headliners on here, System of a Down in Linkin Park. So like, as I said, big radio stuff. But then you start to get further into this list and it goes all over the place. So The Offspring performing 1998's Americana in its entirety, Slayer, Snoop Dogg, Rob Zombie, Tenacious D, The Pixies.
Grammy winners, Tenacious D.
Yes. Sublime with Rome, the Deftones performing 1997's Around the Fur in its entirety, Rancid performing Out Come the Wolves in its entirety, Bad Religion, Refuse, a reunited Thrice, Coheed and Cambria, Story of the Year, Flogging Molly, Google Bordello, Propagandhi. Stop and think about that for a second. Goldfinger, Less Than Jake, Good Riddance. Notice how we just went Propagandhi, Goldfinger. Like, this is such a weird, you know. So
Propagandhi
Less Than Jake
never plays festivals, do they?
I don't think they would. Right.
Any festival, period. I mean, they've never played Fest, even, have they?
Well, the reason is Propagandhi has a very strict rule. If you're over 7 on the pretentious meter, they'll play it. But if you're under 7, they won't.
So Goldfinger, Less Than Jake, Good Riddance, 10-Foot Pole, Bouncing Souls, a reunited Satanic Surfers, The Melvins.
Melvins!
Yeah!
Down, Fear Factory, Atreyu, Carcass, Bolt Thrower, as well as a bunch of punk legends, including the Buzzcocks, Descendants, All the Exploited, and GBH. So that is an enormous lineup. It is so big that I don't even really understand how logistically a festival like this works. Like, how are the bands playing against each other? Are they? I don't know. Right? This is such a foreign thing for me, but yeah, this thing is happening. It is enormous. It is to some degree paid for with my tax money. So
I'm amazed that System of a Down is still a headliner, or Linkin Park for that matter.
Yeah.
Well, no, but see that's what makes like an event like this really fascinating to me is that like. Yeah, like of course they're headliners. They're some of the biggest radio bands. They pull in everyone. We ignore them on principle, but they draw huge.
Do they get played on big radio, like terrestrial radio? Still?
Yeah.
They must, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of bands that we didn't even really mention on here that there's some sort of something playing, which is a tribute to Operation Ivy. I do not know who that is going to be. Mad Caddies, Big D, are you? Big D and the Kids Table, the Planet Smashers, Randy from Sweden. Randy is great. Raised Fist, No Fun at All, Voodoo Glow Skulls, Dillinger Escape Plan.
Man.
Just Slapshot, Suicide Machines, Real McKenzies.
Jesus Christ. And this thing is like, I know who you guys have been to Riot Fest. I mean, something of that size. You know, I've never been to like, you know, Lollapalooza or whatever. But John, have you been to one of the Riot Fests? Like the
no, I really wish I went to Riot Fest like 3 years ago when it was like Peter Hook and Off and stuff, but I didn't go.
Well, yeah, but it was smaller then. Like I went this past summer. And it's a pretty big fucking deal now. And you got really big, you know, really big bands. Patti Smith, Billy Bragg, you know, you got Dropkick Murphys, you know, a ton of really big and well-known and respected bands. But it's become so popular that you can get those bands. But then, like Adam said, you know, are bands playing against each other? Yeah, probably, you know. I mean, if you're having to choose, you know, between you know, System of a Down and Bad Religion, you know, that might be an easy choice for, you know, people like us, punk news people. But if, like, it's between, you know, there's so many combinations that could possibly happen to ruin your day. You know, and it's four days? It's they're cramming a ton of crap in there. Riot Fest is 3 days. They have so many more bands even than that, even than Riot Fest. And Riot Fest was a mess last year. It was just a clusterfuck.
I mean, it's always telling to see when you have a festival that has this many bands playing it from this many genres, like what the lead is when they have to just, you know, list it in a list of concerts. So if you go to like a ticket website, here's how it's listed. It is Amnesia Rock Fest 2015. System of a Down, Linkin Park, The Offspring, Slayer, Snoop Dogg, Pixies, plus guests. Right? So, like, we joked on, I think, the episode before this one about, we were joking about, like, you know, like, does anyone give a shit about The Offspring? But, like, yeah, they do. They still draw really huge. Well, here you have, like, a list of bands where, you know, every band that Punk News would reasonably care about that plays this thing is in the guests.
Yeah, whoever else.
Not worth sticking on the front of the poster. So I'm always curious about like what kind of crowd you get, because it's not, you know, it's got to be a mix. You got to have people that are, you know, just straight, you know, I don't even know what you would call these people. Normal people that aren't necessarily soaked up in the punk scene that just want to go listen to whatever song they heard in the radio.
Yeah, mainstream music listeners.
Mainstream music listeners. I'm trying not to sound insulting, but just like normal people.
Douchebags.
Right? Yeah, douchebags. And you have that. And then you have like everyone that's going to go out there to see like All in the Buzzcocks. Like, I don't know. That mix is amazing to me.
That is an amazing mix. It makes me wonder who the promoter is. Like, does he love like cool punk bands and then just brings in the big guys just to make everything financially feasible? Like, is he using Linkin Park as a way to pay Bill Stevenson, you know?
Yeah.
If you're a listener and you go to this, we want to hear what it's like person. So yeah, all right, so there we go. Amnesia. So what else? Anything else? Anything you want to talk about? You guys, you sleepy? You want to go sleep?
Well, I think we should mention the Good Riddance album, because just based on comments alone, I mean, that can be a little bit of an indication of whether the readers are going to be into it. I mean, I loved them back in the day. I reviewed a couple of their records for the org, and it seems like the kids, or I don't know, maybe the old punks, are still into them, and they're excited to see them back.
I was in Good Riddance hometown last night.
Is it Santa Cruz?
Yep.
Yeah,
I've seen the Cro-Mags though.
So, yeah, I mean, you're right. A lot of people are really excited about this. Good Riddance has never been a band I've been able to get into. I don't want to cast any shade though. Like, lots of respect for Good Riddance. It's just, you know.
I mean, they're the kind of that band. Like, I mean, Lagwagon was my favorite band in high school, and for quite a bit of college. And it was like them and Strung Out, and yeah. Good Riddance, Strung Out, and Lagwagon, where it was just those three. I mean, they were doing what NoFX tried to do better than NoFX, in my opinion, musically. Their lyrics were about more important things, better melodies, better singing. I don't know. You know, it was the kind of thing where they melded like hardcore with pop and pop punk in a way that I hadn't heard before. And while I was familiar with a lot of classic hardcore, I was never into current hardcore at whatever state, even if it was, you know, late 90s, I was never really a hardcore guy. Like I had to go back to the 80s if I was listening to that. But Good Riddance, like, it would almost alternate on their albums, at least back in the classic Good Riddance era, where it's like a pop punk song about a girl and then a hardcore song about being vegan. Like, it would alternate. And to me back then, it was like, it was a way to kind of get that harder edge stuff. But then there'd be, you know, those hooks and that kind of bouncy beat to bring me back. Like, they kind of, they would combine them, but they'd also almost separate them track by track. And it was very interesting. That's what drew me to them. And I don't know if this new thing is going to be at all like that, or if it'll be more kind of like Only Crime. Isn't that the name of Russ?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's hard to say. But people are looking forward to it, I suppose. I'll check it out. Yeah.
Greg, you have way more to say about Good Riddance than I thought you would.
You know, yeah, dude, I was the kind of guy where, you know, when the internet was still, you know, your dial-up or whatever, I'd order, you know, NoFX album or whatever, the Longest Line EP from Fat, and they send you the little, you know, black and white printed little zine thing, and it would have a description of snuff, like, this is Fat Mike's favorite band. I'm like, okay, I haven't heard a single second of their music. Let's order Dime Musubi Bonk or whatever it is. Let's order Good Riddance. Let's order High Standard. I mean, what I everything off of that classic Fat Wreck stuff, and Good Riddance was the one that stuck and strung out.
You know, let's play Wilford Brimley for a minute, and then it is like this doesn't exist anymore. Both Adam, you and Greg will remember this, and for comic books too. You used to get the catalog, and you would just like stare at the catalog like while you're waiting for the school bus or while you're at lunch or something. You would just like go through the catalog over and over and over again, just looking at the record, just trying to imagine what it sounded like, you know? And then, like, actually getting the record was, like, now, I mean, now with the internet, I'll hear a record, it's no big deal. But back in the day, man, like, getting a new record was, like, insane. You're like, yes, a new record, you know? And you used to just pour through the magazine, you know? Just, I don't know that it's bad, that you know, that way of getting records is gone. Like, I don't know what's staring at, you know, the catalog for hours and hours, really. I don't know if that needs to be saved, you know, but I remember doing that, you know. Comic books too.
Yeah, the idea of being excited for something that kind of build up and then finally hearing it, rather than just like, oh, you know, Millen Collin has a new album coming out, here's the song, click, and I'm listening to it.
Yeah. And it was more of a surprise, too, because you had no idea what it really sounded like, you know?
Yeah. And another thing I miss is actually going to record stores on a Tuesday and being like, hey, Tuesday, it's new records are coming out. It's Tuesday or Monday at, like, midnight. My wife was talking about this, like, when, you know, Radiohead and Amnesiac came out or something. Like, she was there at the record store. They opened, you know, they stayed open until midnight and then sold the record. I mean, that doesn't happen. It's, yeah, Wilford Brimley, yeah.
Well, I think we have exhausted all of the things that happened this week.
Well, no, Adam, I need to tell the listeners, if you need life insurance, then
I'll tell you, Mark, I'm pretty sure Mark's older than any of us. Yeah, he is. But when the three of us get together, for some reason, we always talk about, like, where's the physical media?
Do you want a reverse mortgage? Do you want a reverse mortgage? Here's a way that you get to keep in your house and get money from the bank. Quaker Oats. They're so good.
If anyone wants to email us, you can do it at podcast@punknews.org.
Buy our mixtape. Buy our mixtape. It's awesome.
Buy our mixtape, which should be for sale by the time you you get this. All the money goes to Scared Dogs.
Actually, you know, and, I'll tell the listeners where the money goes to, just so Punk News is not making a dime from this, so it's not a money making. And in fact, I'm personally probably going to lose money on this. But in the event that we do make money, we're going to print out more cassettes and give them to the bands. So Punk News is not making any money from this, so there's no diabolical motives. It really is just for fun.
And if I could make a small bump, I bet when the time this episode comes out, the episode of Best Midwestern, episode 4. Featuring an interview with Josh Caterer of the Smoking Popes. That should be coming out right around the same time as this, probably. We just recorded it last night, as I'm saying this right now. And it was amazing. So, yeah. So, listen to that.
All right. We are done. See ya.